Hi, everybody. This is licensed New York State mental health counselor Kevin O'Donohue.
And I'm Nasima Diane Deemer, licensed massage therapist and trauma specialist. And this is The Positive Mind.
Bringing you some ideas, concepts, and guests, and tools.
Many tools.
To help you lead a more positively minded life. And you need to have a positive mind the way we're living these days. Today we're going to be talking about pleasure. And get it wherever you can. And are you getting any? As they say. Are you getting any pleasures? For me, root beer always works.
A root beer float.
A root beer float, but just root beer straight on. I know, my mentor, Armand DeMille, you know, when he was passing away, when he was in the hospital, he kept sending you out to go get another flavor. Go get me cucumber juice, watermelon juice, scotch. How about root beer? For me, it's root beer. You know, but he kept coming up with different ideas. He wanted to go out knowing every last pleasure. What would you want on your last day, your last hours? What pleasures would you line up for yourself? We're going to be talking about pleasure today, but we wanted to recap where we've been. We've talked a lot about feeling here during this pandemic. We're in week 11 of social isolation. Although things seem to be changing a little bit, there are more cars on the road, it is still a quarantine situation. We are still living with social isolation. Nobody seems to have broken that. We still feel socially isolated. And we want to recap some of the shows that we've done. Our first show was about grief and loss. Obviously, if you lost your job, if you lost a loved one, if you know somebody who did lose a loved one, we wanted to do a show about that. And then we did one on quarantine fatigue, this settling in on the bones of the body, feeling of fatigue, an inexplicable fatigue. We don't know what it is, but there is a general sense of fatigue. We didn't come up with that phrase. The media came up with that, quarantine fatigue. And sure enough, I know I had it. And now it's week 11. I'm dealing with something else, another different kind of feeling. And I'm saying, as we're doing these podcasts, going week by week, there's a different texture to each week. And we want to talk about this idea of pleasure and the loss of pleasure, the absence of pleasure. But to finish the recap, we did a show on rhythm. And why are you in your rhythm? Did you lose your rhythm? Have you kept a rhythm? What has been the rhythm for you through this pandemic? Did you find a rhythm? It makes sense if you didn't. It's hard to get into a rhythm when you're not feeling great. And then we did a show on sleep because everybody's sleep seemed to have been disturbed. I know mine was. And then with the dreams, disturbed sleep can often lead to disturbed dreams. And then vulnerability and sharing a vulnerability of how I'm really feeling. Do you have somebody in your life you can be vulnerable with during this time? Oh, that's right. We asked in our first show about getting an ally. Remember that, Nasima?
Yeah.
That we said, you know, the first thing you need is make a list, three allies that you could turn to. If you didn't take our advice, I bet you have an ally now, 11th week in. If you haven't, you can call us here at The Positive Mind, 212-757-4488. Tell us why not, and we'll see what we can do to help you. Because we need allies. You know, this social isolation takes a toll. We've been trying to do programs for you to understand you're not alone. There are plenty of people who are not feeling right, feeling well. And having an ally is one of the best ingredients to feel better. And then last week we did our show on alexithymia. Do you know what alexithymia means? I'm going to ask my producer. No, I'm not going to ask him. But, you know, alexithymia, we said lexicon. Everybody knows lexicon means words, right? And then thymia means emotions. So an alexithymia means absence. So an absence of words to describe your emotions. So you could be having an emotion and not even know you're having it. And that's what alexithymia is. And other people wouldn't see you having an emotion. You would just have a blank face and not, and something's moving in your body, maybe sadness, maybe anger, maybe fear, whatever. And you don't even know how to name it. You can't give a name to that. Do you know somebody like that? Do you know people like that? I know people like that. And they, boy, they wish they weren't that way. They wish they could name their emotions, because emotions are useful. They're very good. They make life worth living. If you don't have any emotions, what are you living for? What's fueling your living? What's fueling your day? What's fueling getting you out of your bed in the morning? And now we're going to talk today about something about pleasure. And that they have like these islands, right, where people go and have pleasure, right? Where the hedonism. Aren't there islands, Nassima, where people go on vacation and they meet other people and they all live sort of hedonistically?
Yes.
Are they still popular?
I don't, probably not. I'm sure they're all shut down right now.
They're probably all shut down.
And those hedonists, the Dionysian types, are probably really bummed out right now because they can't go have fun in the sun.
Right. They were popular at one point for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So today's word is anhedonia. Anhedonia. And it's not an island in Greece. Anhedonia is an absence of pleasure, an inability to feel pleasure, an inability to hold on to pleasure. So we're going to talk today about anhedonia and wondering, like, are you feeling anhedonic? I remember when we were taking phone calls that a gentleman called in and he says, I can't taste my food. Mm. And, you know, my tongue, he was in his 90s. Herb, I believe his name was, and he It's like, why should I eat? I can't even taste anything.
Yeah, it happens.
And it's kind of hard to be logical with somebody like that. I mean, why eat? What is the point of eating? I mean, eating is one of the greatest pleasures going. And if you've stopped having pleasure eating, isn't it tedious to make a meal and clean up after yourself? Why not just stop eating? So Herb was sharing how difficult it was for him to stay motivated to eat. And it was something with his tongue. So we're not sure if it was a clinical symptom of depression or if it was a biological symptom, because anhedonia is a symptom of depression. It's a clinical condition, an inability to feel pleasure, to hold on to pleasure. So let's talk a little bit about that today. Nassima, we've done a lot of work on this. What is anhedonia? What are some symptoms? What makes somebody subject to anhedonia? It would make sense if you're feeling chronic pain in your life that it would be hard for pleasure to penetrate through the chronic pain, right? So let's say you have a bad back. Or, you know, a sore teeth and you haven't been able to get to the dentist. A headache. You have headaches. You've suffered a burn. I mean, a chronic pain. Some people have chronic digestive problems. And, you know, there are some people who have just pain in their stomach all the time. Their digestion is never smooth. It's always an issue, which could prevent them from eating in the first place. Like, why would I want to encounter that discomfort all day based on a meal I ate? And so it would make sense to, like, drop that pleasure and to drop most pleasures, because pleasures, you know, for most of us are welcome distractions, welcome absorptions. So let's break this down. Let's first talk about pleasure, Nassima. What a great topic. Right? Here's your chance. You go to work today and you get to talk about pleasure. Pleasure is not something out there. It's in this body that you have. You know, and if I were to ask you, what are your five top pleasures? You know, how do you want to approach that? You go ahead, because I
was reading something so interesting about pleasure being linked to the quality of liking something. And it's a little different than wanting something. You know, don't you? I feel such a difference in I want that to I like that, you know, and I like that induces kind of a feeling of pleasure in my body. Like it's I like going shopping. I like it. I don't always want to, but I know I like it. I go and it's like about wandering.
Okay.
And seeing the colors and touching the fabrics and, you know, getting an armful of things and going into the dressing room and trying on different things and seeing different colors on my body or different styles and making choices around that and like whether I'm feeling good or not about myself and different
outfits.
Do
women actually like it in the dressing room?
Some do and some don't. We don't have to go into a lot about
that. We do
want to
go there
because
I'm a guy. You're describing everything that I hate. I would hate going into a department store and trying things on. I mean, you know, just that description. But go on. I want to hear a little bit more about this, about liking something as opposed to wanting.
Something I like. You know, I like to do it. It doesn't mean I have to buy things. It doesn't mean, you know, it's just, it was a way to spend time with me on a certain level.
Yeah.
Like just sort of wandering around and saying, oh, this is something that appeals to me that I like. I like that color. I like that cut.
Describe how it feels physically, because I always take pleasure in, I've got the jacket that I like, or I got the shirt that I want. I like the color. I like the feel. I like the hunt, searching for the nice object, the thing that's going to give me pleasure at the destiny. But am I having pleasure during all that? No, the pleasure is when I put it on, when I got it, when it's mine, obtaining it. That's maybe the male psychology. I don't know what the difference is. But to me, it's like, I got it. It's mine. This is what pleasure is like to me. But you're describing a whole process of walking around, trying things on, touching the fabrics, and that, what is that like on a body level?
It just feels like some freedom. It feels creative. Mm-hmm. It feels that there's some flow. And again, I really have to be in the mood for it. But it's a good mood. It's usually a good feeling when I'm going for it. It's like, oh wow, I have this time for myself, and I like that. And I think something about what you're saying. With putting on the shirt or the jacket that you found that you liked, you really like yourself in it.
Yeah.
On some level. And that's pleasurable. It's pleasurable to like yourself.
But I never like it until I get it home. I never like it in the store.
That's interesting. But you must know something about it that you like that made you pick it up.
I'm just,
you know,
trying to describe a difference. It might not be applicable to our audience and everybody out there, but I'm just saying, for me, pleasure is like a destination. You get there and then all of a sudden it feels good. So when I get the shirt home, put it on, I'm walking around in it, and it feels good on my body. Now I'm feeling the pleasure of the shirt.
Right.
So that, anyway, I'm just curious about that difference between liking and wanting. Because one of the things for me, for pleasure, and maybe this is a male thing, that I like the chase. You know, like if I'm going to go out to a special dinner, I know I'm going to go out to an expensive dinner. You know, the anticipation is terrific. But that's not the pleasure. And then, you know, it's the actual eating and savoring and tasting of the food. That there is the pleasure for me. And so for me, I'm always experiencing pleasure on a sort of elemental, kind of grainy, sensual level. To me, that's where all my pleasures lie. Although I was thinking, you know, I like to read as well, you know, and there's reading pleasure. And that's very different than most of the pleasures that I identify with and look for and enjoy on a daily basis. And which brings us to this, you know, during this pandemic, how do you find pleasure? There are no stores open, right? There is no place to go shopping. So if that's, you know, for you, one of the big pleasures, that's shut down. Do you find pleasure then in reading? I mean, do you find pleasure in your mind?
Well, it's been tricky. I've done some shopping online because I knew I needed to get some new clothes. I'm really tired of the clothes I've been wearing, and I wanted something fresh. So I went online and I shopped, but it is so not as pleasurable as going into the store. And you know, you have to think a little bit more about is this right? You know, and I probably am not going to try things that I wouldn't normally try. Like I was going for my tried and true sort of designs and shapes that I know will look good. But the fun thing about going shopping is trying on maybe new styles and seeing, hey, does this work or not? Yeah. You know? So, I've felt the desire and the want to go shopping and being like, I feel like my hands are tied. You know, it's such a kind of a sad feeling. So, and I'm a little bit afraid of going shopping.
Of course.
Now.
So do you find a substitute pleasure? Because I think most of us could find like 10 pleasures of ours that have been gone and cut off because of the pandemic. And that could be one of them. I mean, right? I mean,
yeah.
Look at you can't. I miss the movies, right? You can't go to a movie.
Right.
I never realized how much I loved going to a movie until I realized I wasn't allowed to go.
Right. I've been able to walk my dog, and that's become sort of a new pleasure. And like wandering around the city, kind of like I would have wandered around a store and looking in windows and looking for who's open and who isn't. And that kind of thing has been some pleasure. And also just being outside more, going over to the East River. I never walked over to the East River.
Okay.
And now I'm walking over to the East River.
Right. So I don't know how to approach this because we could get into like all of the things we've been denied, which I think everybody knows. We haven't been able to go to a stadium or an arena to watch anything. We haven't been able to go to live music, right? We haven't been able to go to a play. You haven't been able to go to a movie. You almost can't go to the beach, or you up until recently haven't been able to. You can't travel. I mean, so we could really go down that route, but
I really want to
stay with what pleasures are available. What pleasures are on your list now? Because, and it's effort, right? I mean, it's effort because we're still sort of getting used to the idea that I don't have those pleasures that I took for granted available. I consciously have to have pleasure, make time for pleasure, maybe have new pleasures, create pleasures. And that's work. And that there are some people who have thrown in the towel and can't have any pleasure and don't have any pleasures. And those people we call anhedonic.
And they may not have chosen to throw in the towel. It just maybe fell away, that you just lost the motivation to do it. And that's, you know, it's typical of the anhedonic to, you know, it starts with like a mild depression. It's kind of like what you were saying before. And little by little, you're doing less and less. You have less and less motivation to do the things you enjoyed and found pleasure in.
Sure.
And it just becomes kind of a vicious cycle.
Yes. Yeah.
And maybe you're feeling like it would just take too much effort to start knitting or doing a coloring book you know, something different that you might be able to find pleasure in.
Right.
Someone who's
stuck, and they just, the good thing about having allies and people or living with family or living with others as you're going through this is that they might see it in you. You know, you're not responding to the meals. You're sleeping later. You're watching TV, or you're not cultivating anything. You don't go out for walks. You're just kind of clenching and closing in on yourself. And of course, pleasure is going to go by the boards. So of course, it's going to be going out of your life. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed, and I think, you know, the supermarkets would say, I mean, people are shopping for food. One of these pleasures that's emerging is the kitchen and making meals with somebody or by yourself. And, you know, that could be like the highlight of your day, two or three different meals that you're making, as opposed to buying them at work, having your lunch at your desk, different kinds of things. But to your point, some people just might not be inspired even to make a meal.
And people are like baking bread.
Really?
Yes.
Is there an upsell in flour and eggs? And
yes. They are finding that more and more people are ordering the flour to make bread with. And it's simple to make. It's a time process. So people are home and they're able to, you know, let it rise, punch it down, let it rise, and bake it, you know, all in one day. You can bake your own loaf of bread. And it's the most amazing smell. It's the most amazing feeling to cut into a fresh loaf of bread, butter it, and eat it. I mean, it's just complete. It's manna from heaven. It really is the thing that makes everybody happy.
And that could,
except for those poor people who are lactose intolerant or gluten intolerant. But they can. There's so many other kinds of bread out there. But it's so important to find these little pleasures.
Yes, that's something that's connected down the centuries, right? I bet in any pandemic in the 18th century, what'd they do? They baked bread. At least they could do that. In the 19th century, you know,
they baked bread.
The
I'm
20s,
sure they did.
So even in these modern times, I think they microwave the bread.
No, they're actually baking it.
They're really baking
people
it.
Who have,
but
isn't people who have ovens.
That,
and you can also bake bread on a
isn't
on the stove.
Isn't that one of the pleasures? A house filled with an aroma. You know, how
flour,
many bachelors
water,
out
yeast.
There haven't had that experience, that feeling quite in a long time?
Yeah.
And families, you know, that, you know, parents work two jobs where they're not having the chance to cook every night, every morning.
Yeah.
And yes, these households now are filled with the aroma of a meal and a creative meal, not just a fast food meal. And what does that do? So let's isolate that pleasure. Isn't that like one of the big pleasures? And before, when you were talking also about, you know, I was thinking about Christmas presents, that wrapped versus unwrapped. And, you know, it was those shiny boxed wrapped Christmas presents that were the ones filled with the most pleasure opening and excitement. So it's like there must be some kind of anticipatory pleasure connected with pleasure in general. When I anticipate I'm going to be satisfied, it enhances the pleasure.
Yeah, and it sounds like you have a sense of what that pleasure is going to be, because you've had that pleasure many times in your life.
Yes.
Like, you know, that's one that's always going to be a good one. Like, yeah, wrapped presents.
Mm-hmm.
Just the unwrapping of them is fun. No matter what even's inside, doesn't really matter on some level. It's like the pulling them open is what's fun.
Pleasure is something that you can count on. You know, you could count on it at the end, you know, as a destination at the end of something. And it strikes me now, we can't count on pleasures. The old pleasures that we were having aren't working. They're not available to us. We're not having them, and we've had to find substitute pleasure. So you were talking about baking bread. Very simple pleasure. And maybe pleasure itself is something very simple. It connects to something very simple in us.
I think it could be, and that might be one of the silver linings in this, that people are starting to realize that you don't need hyped up experiences to experience pleasure. And maybe people in having to sort of drop back into their own lives and their own homes rediscovered some simpler, quieter pleasures and things that they liked that maybe, you know, they haven't had time for or, you know, had the quiet time for.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this show is about, you know, people who have a hard time sort of holding that and being able to stick with it. And maybe for someone who's anhedonic or depressive, that time would sort of sink them into a deeper and deeper hole of not being able to feel pleasure, not have the motivation to go get pleasure, not have the motivation to bake bread or, you know, do things that might bring some pleasure.
Yes.
It would just, they would slide down a slope. And that's something that I think we wanted to teach people about, just to watch in themselves. Are things becoming really sort of black and white and gray in your life?
And do some things seem not worth it?
Yeah.
That's, I think, what really cuts everything off. If you're, and it, that's why it's aligned with depression. If it doesn't look even worth it to make the dinner, to cook the meal, to bake the bread, to go for the walk, to do the exercise, to eat the right thing. You know, if it just doesn't seem worth it, you're probably close to anhedonia.
Especially if it lasts for days and days. I can imagine one day of feeling that. It's kind of normal. Yeah. This is a stressful time. This is hard.
For it to become clinical, it has to be 2 weeks. So this is like got a gestation period. It just begins, and then lo and behold, before you know it, wow, I'm not really wanting to be bothered to have any pleasure. Which last week we were talking about alexithymia and being born out of this sense of not feeling anything is worth it. You know, so we're connecting here that it just doesn't feel worth the effort. So why even pursue the pleasure? It's finding the motivation. Seems to me like alexithymia, finding the words for my emotions. Why bother? You know, why bother pursue a pleasure or invent a pleasure or find a pleasure or bother myself to pursue a pleasure? And the same thing with alexithymia. Why even name an emotion? Why have an emotion? Why even struggle to explain an emotion? I'm so fine, satisfied, not naming any emotions. Let me just be. So it sounds, you know, but that is a clinical condition, and that's risky territory. Nasima, we want to tell our audience how these things are risky when you stopped having pleasure and you stop being able to name emotions. You're in risky territory. What is it we can do? How do you know you're in risky territory?
Well, when we were studying and, you know, for the show, the risk factors for anhedonia seem to have amazing parallels to what's happening outside our door right now. The risk factors are a recent traumatic or stressful event. So this pandemic is a recent traumatic or stressful event.
Okay, for sure.
A history of abuse or neglect. Many people have that. And I'm sure it's bringing them up in their risk factor. And an illness that impacts your quality of life. So whether you've had COVID or been with somebody who's had COVID, or not even had it, this illness of other people is having an impact on your life.
Also, but if you've had diabetes your whole life, let's say, wouldn't you say if you've had to prick your finger for every day of your life, that that might incline you to turn off your pleasure synapses and your naming of emotion synapses? You know, I mean, I would think
you might feel like, you know, what's it worth if I can't eat the foods I want to eat? You know, if I can't continue to live the life I want to live, those pleasures that are causing me diabetes, it might not seem worth it to give up the pleasures and find new ones.
It's like dialysis. If you're having to go through dialysis 3, 4, or 5 times a week, I could see it increasing your inclination for anhedonia because it's just the total opposite of pleasure. And if that's my life, if that's the routine I live in, then why bother myself with having any kind of pleasure? These risk factors make a lot of sense.
Well, also, you know, as you describe, any major illness, COPD, anything that's limiting your life because of a chronic or major illness, or going through, say, cancer, something that can be so taxing to your system and can then come with all kinds of limitations afterwards.
How about failed relationships? Like if you're in a marriage, in a relationship that never seems to be satisfying, like you're in this one long argument that never ends, you know, that there doesn't seem to be a destination. You're not reaching to a place of pleasure with a partner in a relationship. So that could turn you off to the idea of pleasure also.
It could, absolutely, because it's a major kind of stress on your life.
Right.
Eating disorders are often linked to that as well. Think about it, because people are sort of denying themselves pleasure of eating.
Yes. So that would be one of the, if somebody came into your office and said, I'm anorexic, you would naturally say, well, you're cut off from a pleasure principle. You're cut off from enjoying food.
Right.
And then, of course, from connected to last week, we found that people who suffer from an anorexia or bulimia or an eating disorder were often touch deprived, grew up in touch deprived homes. And we will talk more about that when we come back from our musical break. I am Kevin O'Donoghue, licensed mental health counselor in New York City.
And I'm Nasima Diane Deemer, licensed massage therapist and trauma specialist.
You're listening to The Positive Mind. We'll be right back. We are back, The Positive Mind. I'm Kevin O'Donohue.
And I'm Nasima Diane Deemer.
And so, Nasima, we talked about during the break about replacement pleasures. Have people discovered, have you out there discovered a replacement pleasure?
Or
more than one, right? You mentioned baking bread as a replacement pleasure. And we talked about cooking as a replacement pleasure. I mean, I think for me, one thing I've discovered is yoga, which I never thought I would have room for in my life. But, you know, because I'm the kind I need, when life gets hectic, I go for a run or go for a swim or do some vigorous physical. And I'm not in the mood to do any of that. I haven't been inspired by any of that. And I kind of really hope that I've established a change in myself that I don't gravitate towards those things. Yoga is turning out to be like incredibly nourishing and nurturing and easy and enjoyable. I'm not pushing this kind of yoga. Whereas when I was living my regular life, you know, I wanted to always take something to the extreme, press really hard, get the right poses as far as I could, run as far as I could, always being disappointed in my performance. Now it's like, no, I'm just going to take this slowly and methodically, and whether I feel pleasure from it or not, I'm just going to go through it. And of course, I am feeling pleasure from it. So for me, the replacement is that voice that I used to have that, you know, you have to go do this. You have to run hard or you have to do a good performance or something. With now, nope, I'm going to spend 45 minutes just stretching, breathing, and enjoying it as I go. A clear sign to me, I am still available for pleasure, to receive pleasure. I'm not anhedonic, even though I was afraid, you know, I could have been or I was. And I have other ones as well, and we can talk more about that.
I'm wondering if you've kind of noticed, if you remember, like how you felt after, you know, going for a swim and how long that feeling would last. And how long the feeling lasts after doing yoga. Is it different?
Totally different. Because the exercise from swimming has always been great. And it's helped me manage my day. But, and so it could last for a few hours, actually. The high from the exercise, whatever gets released biochemically. But with yoga and with the way I'm having my pleasures now, they seem to be spread out over the entire day. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not rushed, and my moods or my day isn't like a roller coaster. It's just a, you know, it's one smooth highway, let's say.
It sounds like it's more even.
It's much more even, and I'm staying connected to it because I'm remembering it. Whereas when I was recovering or feeding off of the exercise of swimming, it enabled me to do my work better and more. But I wasn't in touch with the pleasure of it. I think this is an important topic. I think this is a great thing for us to talk about.
Yeah.
And wondering like how people are dealing with the lack of their old pleasures and the creation of new ones and how pleasure is coming into their lives. You talked about anhedonia as the inability to hold on to a pleasure, right?
A good
Isn't
mood.
That one of the hallmarks?
Yeah. You can't, you know, it's like maybe you'll enjoy something, but it's like gone. and you almost don't remember it even happening. So say you did that yoga, but within, you know, half an hour, you were feeling tense again and you were back in your own mindset, and you'd forgotten that you even did yoga. That's not always, you know, if you were true anhedonic, that's probably how you would experience it. Like, right. You would do it, but it just wouldn't stick. Like, nothing seems to stick. And that's a quality that, to me, in hearing it, I'm like, yeah, that's such a quality of traumatic childhood, abuse, neglectful childhood, or something like that. Like, you just didn't get the ability or the reflection or the time to really feel good.
Right.
Like, to feel goodness in your body, to feel liking something. And it makes sense in a chaotic, traumatic, violent, or potentially violent, you know, home. Feeling good is dangerous. Feeling good is, there's no
space. Makes you a target.
There's no space
for
feeling
good. Right, if everybody's unhappy and you're the one happy person in the home.
Forget it.
Boy, are you a target.
Yeah.
What do you get to be so happy for?
Right.
You know,
right.
So we call these things, and I think this is connecting to when we left, we took the break with anorexia and the touch deprivation of anorexics, that these are called adverse childhood experiences, that your system is set up for deprivation. And so why have pleasure in the first place? Because my system knows this deprivation that was chronic as a child, that I'm not going to bother myself to even expect or to have a pleasure.
And what's really interesting about the adverse childhood experiences, what that study proved was that people were more prone to having chronic major illnesses like diabetes and heart disease and COPD. So that's what fascinates me about how this is all so connected. And I just want to put in here, there is hope. There's a lot of hope for treatment. So it's just that ACEs study was so important in recognizing the impact of adverse childhood experiences on the human psyche, body, capacity to feel and be well in this world.
I want to give the audience a sense of some of these. Like, if you grew up in a home where there was a lot of fighting, or you saw power differentials, like the father dominant over the mother and humiliating the mother, or there was a lot of humiliation going on amongst the siblings. If you grew up in a household where there was punching and hitting, and that this was acceptable, and so you might never know when you were going to get hit next. Or if you grew up in a home where the refrigerator was never full or always empty. Imagine that as a kid. Yeah. Opening a fridge and needing food and seeing an empty refrigerator, an empty cabinet. This is a system that, why even bother to get stimulated and look for pleasure and want pleasure, receive pleasure? Did somebody go to jail? I mean, it was somebody chronically absent,
right?
You know, like for jail or for other reasons,
or addictions,
addictions, traveling. A parent that was chronically traveling. Let me see. Are you a product of a divorce? I mean, if you're 5 years old and your parents divorce, I mean, it's different than if you're 15, right? So you haven't had 15 years of deprivation of a parental figure. You've had five, you know, but if you're at 5 years of age and you're missing a mother or you're missing a father, that's a system that's going to get set up to not anticipate a lot of pleasure, because pleasure, like you say, is dangerous.
Right.
Was there an alcoholic, a substance abuser, somebody depressed, somebody mentally ill, schizophrenia, you know, delusional, hallucination, somebody who's just mentally ill, bipolar, whatever, mm-hmm. which is another way for saying something unpredictable.
Right.
And so you're sitting on edge, not wondering what's going to happen next.
A certain instability in your life, like things, there's no place to rest, no place to rest and feel safe. Because when you rest and feel safe, then you feel good, right? You can feel goodness in the world.
Right.
If you didn't have that, it might be very hard for you to hold good feelings now. So it's important that those people who went through this and are now in their lives, it's important to recognize that you survived that and that you can learn and develop the skills and the tools to help you be able to hold that good feeling and hold that good mood, that it can be real.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. But before you do, you know, I'm discovering as we're going here, and one thing that strikes me about pleasure is it like it has a beginning, middle, and end. And there's a closure, like a finishing of a pleasure. So you're having a pleasure, it's over with, and your body is recovering and getting geared up for the next pleasure. Where, you know, if you're someone who grew up with these adverse childhood experiences, these deprivations, your system isn't used to like a closure, like, oh, that was a good experience, and then it's over. And then I go about my life and I have another pleasure, and it's over. And then I go about my life, you know, so it's like the system gets used to being opened up, experiencing something positive, closure, and then normal life. And then again, opening, experiencing, closing. And so again, if you are someone who has been subject chronically to a deprivation of some kind, then you are going to feel, why bother?
And especially now. It might be hitting you really hard. Like you might have been able to get through life before the pandemic with the different things that you were engaging in. Maybe you had friends that you would go see. And even though it might not have felt as pleasurable as it seemed like they were having, at least there was something that was happening that you could engage with. But now, with everything kind of closed or restricted, and the fear and the whole pandemic story, the paranoia that can come in at this point too, can really be sort of showing you that, wow, you know, I'm struggling here. I'm struggling to feel any goodness. There is still goodness, even though this is a really tough place that we're in. There's still a lot of good that's happening. There's still potential for feeling good at this time, even though everything's going on. And that's interesting what you're saying about this moving into pleasure and the closure of it and feeling okay with the closure of that pleasure. That doesn't send you into a depression, but that you're okay and you still have a good mood.
Yeah.
And you can move into a pleasurable, maybe more heightened experience and come back down again.
So, Nisima, let's go into a little bit of treating this. Like, how can we revive people who maybe are chronically used to some kind of deprivation, or people that are having a hard time in the pandemic finding a new pleasure, exploring a kind of pleasure? How do you revive that in yourself? You know, without the extremes, like, I think drug addicts, people who take up substances, you know, they're trying to, you know, bridge something in themselves. They're trying to bypass the struggle to really experience something by going to the maximum. Let me have the biggest dose. Let me have something that's going to totally change my mind, change my chemistry, and make me feel pleasure without me having to work for it. And so, you know, it makes sense that anhedonia is a symptom of substance abuse, that people who struggle with substance abuse also struggle with experiencing pleasure. That how can we help them forego the substance and help them revive the capacity for pleasure without needing a substance?
Well, that's the thing, that word capacity. And you can't really revive it. You have to build it. You have to build capacity. It's like when you go to the gym, you're not going to be able to lift 500-pound weights first day.
Okay.
You have no capacity to do that. You haven't built the muscles to do that. You haven't built the knowledge and the capacity to do that. So it's the same thing for somebody holding a good pleasure who's struggling with this problem. You're going to have to start small and really work on letting yourself sort of feel your body and feel maybe some sensual pleasures, like taking a nice hot shower or, you know, sitting in a tub with some nice scents, like starting some sensual things, going for a walk on the beach, dipping your toes in the water, feeling the sand. Like, just notice if you get a sensation from that, if you get a feeling from that, and that's all. Just do little things first. Because remember, you're working with a system that isn't used to holding this good feeling. So see if there's some way you can like sit outside, feel the sun on your face, and maybe also feel the support of the seat you're sitting on or the ground you're standing on to give you a little bit of capacity and support for feeling that. And saying to yourself, yeah, this is good. This is okay. I can feel this, right, and I'll be okay. Yeah? You have to like sort of orient yourself to the good feeling. It's something else I'll do with clients, especially who are in a lot of pain. Is there one molecule in your body that doesn't feel the pain? We can start that small. One molecule that doesn't feel the pain. And usually they can find it or imagine it. Or maybe it's just one little part of their body, like the tip of their pinky finger doesn't feel the pain. Okay, let's pay attention to that. And it changes things. It changes the perspective.
Garlic.
What about garlic?
I think you just get a plate of garlic, saute it up in the pan, and see how you react to that. Or onion.
Sensual experience.
Yeah, alive in the senses somehow. Mm-hmm. Chocolate, or strawberry. Buy some fruit. Buy little pieces of fruit.
And
close
just,
your eyes. Yeah. Maybe salt. Something, so like to me, it would start with smell. To me, that's a sense that's very alive and, to really feel through my nose, feel something, to revive something. I always, they often make a connection between a scent and a memory.
Yes.
Right? So if you smell coffee and it can transport you back to a time in childhood, or bacon, or a turkey roast or something, that you start in the kitchen, start there as a way to revive something. And then these flavors, right? Have a strawberry, take an onion, take a lemon. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, mm-hmm. To me, if you can feel disgust or repulsion, you can feel pleasure. Right? And not that you'd feel disgust or repulsion about garlic or onions or lemon or anything. But if you can go that, so as a spectrum, we could see, you go from something that is pleasurable to something unpleasurable or vice versa.
Right.
So you're trying to revive a system, like dark chocolate, right? I mean, if you can't respond to dark chocolate, something's going on.
Well, it could be a way of sort of menuing, sort of figuring out what does bring me a pleasurable feeling. And sometimes people don't know what a pleasurable feeling is. It could be warmth. It could be tingling. It could be like butterflies in the stomach. I mean, these are sensory experiences. And maybe if you're alexithymic, it'd be hard for you to even say what those experiences are.
Right.
And, for someone who's really shut down, it would be great to have some support in it, because you just might not know what you're feeling when you're feeling it. And like to get some support and saying like, oh, it feels cold where your hands are touching. It's like, okay, well, that's something. Now notice if that's pleasurable or not. And again, it might be hard because if somebody's just not, doesn't even know the words for pleasure.
Right.
Or it's so slippery. So sometimes I work specifically with muscles that might support the containment of a feeling, of an experience in your body.
So why don't you do one for us?
Well, let me just set it up a little bit around containments, about activating large muscle groups that encase large areas of the body. So the first one I'll demonstrate is for the upper body. And it's about activating the muscles of the chest and the muscles of the back. And just think about it. These muscles are sort of containing your heart center, your heart, your ability to feel others and be with others. So taking your palms and pressing them in front of your chest with about 20% of your strength. And then bring your shoulder blades together in the back. So you're doing both things together. And then just a couple of natural breaths here, nothing special. Just holding it for 1, 2, 3 breaths maybe. And then this is the real key. You have to release it slowly. So to a count of 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And just take a moment to just feel. Do you feel a little more integrated in your body, like a sense of your body, your upper body?
I feel a kind of relief, but not a big relief, like not an relief.
Right.
Is that the idea? You don't
That's
want the
idea.
The relief? You want
you
a
don't
gradual
wanna,
kind of...
Yeah. You want to be able to hold that feeling of relief. That it's contained, like there's a sense of relief in your body that's contained, that I can experience and feel and maybe keep a little longer than that.
So let's do that again, because yeah. I really want to tune into what you're saying is important. Let's do it again. So you put your fold your one hand over the other.
Yeah, put your palms together and press them about 20% of your strength. It doesn't have to be a huge strength. And then bring your shoulder blades together in the back. So we're doing like... kind of contrary things, but but a dual thing. And you're just doing a couple of natural breaths here. And then slowly releasing to a count of 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And just take a moment to just feel that. Mm. What do you feel now in your body?
I feel kind of warm and mm-hmm. expanded. I do feel a kind of vibration and expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel this idea of containment that you mentioned, that now I am a container that something could come into, like a pleasure. So I get it.
And stay a little while.
Right.
I like to, when I describe it to my clients, it's like when you take a sponge and you squeeze all the water out, which is what we kind of do when we create the tension. And then the slow release is really key here, because then you're kind of soaking that water back up. Like you can't just throw an open sponge on water. It's not going to soak anything in. You have to slowly release it, and it sucks up all the water, and it's sucking up that capacity to hold that feeling.
I see.
So we're kind of using the muscles in the body to... Oh, yeah, here, I have an adult container of a body to hold maybe this new feeling. So I would suggest doing this, like have a piece of chocolate and then do this exercise and see if you can contain that pleasure a little longer and hold it a little bit more.
Mm.
And then, you know, return to it. Keep doing this. This is, again, like building the muscles to be able to lift 500 pounds. Yeah, you really have
right.
to build a capacity to do this. And people who grew up in a traumatic, neglectful childhood, terrible place, this is really hard. You have very weak, quote-unquote, muscles to be able to contain and yes. hold these good feelings.
Right.
This will also help you contain bad feelings so that they're not overwhelming you all the time, which is another side effect of coming
right.
up in a traumatic childhood. So,
but rehabilitative, I think
absolutely.
Pleasure, your pleasure sources and your pleasure zones in your body are recoverable and rehabilitative.
Absolutely.
But another piece of this that we're not talking about is safety, because people who did grow up with adverse childhood experience or any kind of trauma, or even people who didn't grow up with trauma, but are suffering from chronic illnesses and chronic pain, things that they've had to adapt to as an adult that have dulled their capacity for pleasure and the experience of pleasure, can revive it by doing some of these practices. To me, with that exercise was an eye-opener, because I could see having to do it maybe 20 times to really get the concept and then think of a pleasure being available to enter and me being available to experience it. But what I was saying about safety is, if you grew up being vigilant all the time for the next attack or on guard for some catastrophe that could be happening, that's another piece of this beyond the pleasure ability that we need to talk about, right? I mean,
yeah.
So I think... you know, rehabilitating this sense of pleasure is important and is a good first step. But then we should do a show also talking about safety and
Absolutely.
how lack of safety affects the system, affects your bodily experience of enjoying life, and safety as the basis for being able to enter into a relationship with somebody.
Well, in our next show, we're going to be talking to Nancy Napier, who is a child trauma expert and talks all about this. It's going to be a really fantastic show.
So you are listening to The Positive Mind. Thank you for tuning in to us today. My name is Kevin O'Donohue, licensed New York State mental health counselor.
And I'm Nasima Diane Deemer, licensed massage therapist and trauma specialist. If you'd like to reach us for questions or comments about the show, we're at info@thepositivemindcenter.com. That's info@thepositivemindcenter.com.
And if you want to listen to past shows, the special shows we've done here for the COVID-19 virus, you can check into thepositivemindcenter.com. If you want to reach me, Kevin, you can reach me at kevin@thepositivemind.com.